Welcome to Energy Matters, where we explore alternative health in the Pioneer Valley. I'm your host, Caroline Rutterman, and I'm a Reiki professional and intuitive in Northampton, Massachusetts. For the past 9 years, I've been teaching people how to use their intuition and helping them reduce stress and anxiety. Together, we'll talk with other practitioners and learn how they bring health and healing to the Pioneer Valley. Let's do this. Welcome, welcome. You are listening to Energy Matters, and I am Caroline Rutterman. Today, we are here interviewing Ruth Folkman, who is a clinical psychologist and certified group psychotherapist. She is all about the mindfulness-based stress reduction. Let's just break it down a little bit. What is mindfulness?
You know, it's interesting because it's just everywhere in our culture right now.
It is. It's such a buzzword. It's like it feels very trendy in a lot of ways.
Yeah. And there's a way in which that's really wonderful and a way in which it's also a little confusing. Like, is this the pop, you know, in the moment 15 minutes of fame for mindfulness? And I don't think so, because mindfulness is... You know, it's not so mysterious, actually. You know, it's something that we all have within us. We're all born with this capacity to be mindful.
Absolutely.
Which simply means being present in our experience as it is in the moment. And what's challenging about that is that, you know, as anybody who's spent any time with babies knows about how this is an inherent human capacity.
Yeah.
But as we mature and become busy with our adult lives, you know, we get much more present future focused.
Yes.
You know, we're always becoming and what's next and what's my to-do list.
Yeah, that's my life. I'm like, I have to make sure that I have to be here at this time. And
yeah. Right?
Absolutely.
Or focused on the past.
Right.
Right? Yeah. Sort of replaying and remembering and reviewing. And so this very simple fundamental capacity that we have can get really overshadowed by this tendency to focus on the past or the future. So
how do, bringing it back just to a moment ago that you referenced how babies have this inherent quality, what do you mean by that? Can you talk a little bit more about that?
It's really just being in the present and really attuned to the senses. Right? These five senses that we have. What can we see?
Yeah.
What can we hear? What can we smell and taste and feel in the body?
Yeah.
Touch, you know? And so babies, you can see babies who just stop in amazement when they see a big truck go by.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Right? Or they hear something, you know, grains of sand. They're just mesmerized by that tactile sense of something in their hands.
Yeah.
Right? So that that willingness to just drop in to what's actually here in the present moment.
I like that.
Yeah, it's so powerful.
I really like that a lot.
It's like an antidote, right? That when we're able to do that, it gives our mind a place to rest from the stress and anxiety and fear about what's next.
Yes.
What should I be doing? Yeah. What's going to happen?
Yeah. It's all terrifying. Just kidding. No, it's great. When you're paying attention to your body and the tactile kind of things, it's fun and it's delightful and it's, you know, it's a totally different experience when you're just like being here now.
Right.
You know?
Right.
So tell me a little bit, how did you get into this work?
Well, I got into it through yoga, actually.
Oh, okay, cool.
Yeah, so
yoga around this area?
Around this area, yeah. About 25 years ago, I really dropped into yoga. I became a big
yogini,
you know?
Right.
And so meditation and this body awareness started there.
Cool.
And then it was just so interesting to me how we can simply sit and be not so much engage with what am I doing right now, but Absolutely. Just pausing to be present. So I started practicing meditation more and more, and, you know, and also pursuing an interest in Buddhist psychology.
Cool.
Yeah.
Very cool.
So I was very lucky because it was just serendipity that as I was beginning my clinical training for my doctorate in psychology, I picked up this book that had just come out that was written by the executive director of the Center for Mindfulness, Saki Santarelli.
Okay.
It's a wonderful book that he wrote primarily for medical students that he was teaching at UMass.
They're the most stressed out bunch I've ever met in my life.
Right? So true.
Literally so stressed out.
Yeah. So I picked up this book, which is basically written for healers. Mm-hmm. And so he establishes this beautiful frame of how even as we know that we have something to offer, people come to us because we have a specialty of some, whether it's medicine or psychology or Reiki.
Sure.
That we're not so different, you know, that as human beings, our experience is so similar, no matter what on the surface might be and feel like a major difference sometimes.
Of course, yeah.
That as human beings, we share so. So I found that idea so powerful, and I really kind of dove into that world.
Very cool.
Then, yeah.
Very cool. So one thing I wanted to say is that, you know, for all you listeners out there, you know, I'm often, when I'm coordinating and bringing in guests, I am emailing, I'm kind of making phone calls, and one thing that really just charmed me very much about you and your signature on the bottom of your email, and it says, be kinder than necessary, for everyone you meet is fighting some kind of battle. And I have to say, I love that. I just thought that was so, so, so true, you know, because you just never know. Like, you know, you don't know, we don't know. You can't just look at somebody and be like, oh, they're going through cancer, or somebody that they love is, you know, dealing with some major health issue or financial stress. Like, even though this practice is very much geared towards mindfulness, we really have no idea about anything that's happening in their world and sort of like inside their mind or their emotional state. And so I just wanted to say that was really cute. Mm-hmm. And I like that. So, just, you know, be kinder than necessary, for everyone you meet is fighting some kind of battle. So I was just curious, like, if you had anything more to add to that or where you drew that quote from or, you know.
You know, I forget where I encountered that quote, and I researched it to try to find who to attribute it to, and unclear who initially came up with it.
Sometimes those wise words just like come from the collective consciousness,
right?
Or like a lot of people have the same idea all at once, and it's like hard to source,
right?
Yeah.
But kindness is really so. It's a fundamental value to me, you know, and it's really how I try to move through the world to remember that. So I also have it as a bumper sticker on my car. Be kinder than necessary.
Oh, I like that.
Yeah.
I like that a lot. So how does that, when you say that kindness is a value, what does that mean? What does that exactly mean as like a practice? Like, how does that value become a practice or, yeah, can you like flesh that out a little bit for me? Because I feel like there's some meat in there.
Let's see. Well, as a vegetarian,
I am too. I'm vegan, so I know. I was aware of the words that were coming out, but I was like, they still seem fitting. So,
well, it's interesting. So my newest thing that I've really been committing to as an intention is non-judgment.
Okay.
And so it's kind of related to that, but a slightly different emphasis. So, but kindness is to just really try to have generosity.
Okay.
A generosity of spirit and intention as front and center. You know, to see people and assume we're all doing the best we can in the moment.
Yeah.
And sometimes it's not quite good enough, and we wish it were different.
Yeah.
Right? And
yeah.
whether that's our own actions or someone that we're in relationship to.
Yeah.
But to just keep coming back to that place of, we don't know exactly why this is here right now, but it's what's here. So we go back to mindfulness,
yeah.
right? This
yeah.
willingness to work with what's here
yeah.
and not be caught up in our story about the way we think it should be.
Of course.
Or the way we wanted it to be.
Yeah. yeah.
Or what would be fair or right or just. Because when we're rooted in those mind states, it's easy to be harsh.
Yeah.
It's easy to be judgmental.
Of course.
It's easy to get caught up in reactivity rather than being more intentional about how we bring ourselves to experience.
Yeah, I like that. I like that a lot. So I want to find out a little bit more about your classes. So you had mentioned earlier that you offer these mindfulness-based stress reduction classes and then also the mindfulness-based cognitive therapy classes. And I know that you have a couple of them starting in September. So can you tell us a little bit about, we have about a minute or so before we actually take a short break. So can you tell us a little bit about what those classes look like, how they're different from one another? Just kind of telling us a little bit more about what the difference is between the mindfulness stress reduction is and then the mindfulness for depression is.
Okay, in about a minute?
Well, you know.
Yeah, okay.
Roughly.
So what they share is that they are experiential learning programs.
Experiential learning programs, okay.
Right? So they're not classes like we've all been indoctrinated in these more cognitive academic learning programs.
Gotcha.
Experiential learning means that in both of these classes, and they share a lot, you're learning about mindfulness and you're learning meditation.
Okay.
And you know, because mindfulness is this inherent capacity that we all have to be present. Meditation is formal practice.
Right.
You know, that has a particular structure and form to it.
Gotcha.
And so meditation is where we best develop our capacity to know our mind and the workings of our mind. So that's shared in both of these programs.
Very cool.
I love teaching these programs because they're so powerful in people's lives, you know?
And they're 8 weeks.
They're 8 weeks, and they can be so transformative for people. It's mind-boggling.
That's 2 months, people. That's 2 months of, like, really getting to explore and, like, process in their group settings, is it?
The group settings, and my groups tend to be smaller, and I have a really beautiful space.
Nice.
On Center Street in Northampton.
Cool.
And so we do lots of different practices. You know, it's basically in these classes, people are developing, it's like a toolbox.
Yeah.
Right? A bunch of skills that you can learn how to apply in different settings. And so some of them are like right here, right now. And some of them require that you're in a certain place and you have a certain amount of time.
Absolutely.
You know, and then there's this range of in between, you know, so that people really leave the program having a sense of, you know, having a toolbox that they can carry with them.
Yeah. I like that a lot. I like that. And your office is on, I know your office is on Center Street because my office is right over at Central Chambers above Gazebo, but you have the blue benches outside of your office.
I do.
And I walk by, I've been walking by and I'll be like, that's Ruth's office right there. So, so if anybody's walking around town and listening to or driving around town, listening to the radio, if you see those blue benches outside on Center Street, you'll be like, oh, those are the mindfulness-based stress reduction classes that Ruth Volkman's offering. And I know that the classes, the first one starts on September 26th, and then there's an orientation for both of the classes the week before.
Two weeks before.
And all that information is also on your website, which is drruthvolkman.com, and it's www.drruthvolkman.com, drruthvolkman.com. So check that out. If you are tuning in, we are about to do a live guided meditation. And so if you are interested in listening alongside us, it's probably going to be about 10 minutes or so. So I'm going to turn this over to Ruth now, and she's going to bring us through. And however, how should we begin?
Well, let's begin by just noticing what is here when we turn ourselves to this idea of practice. So, you know, and this is one of the things that's so interesting about mindfulness is that we always refer to it as a practice because we're not machines and there's not a lot that we can actually control in our experience. And so this willingness to work with what's here again and again and again is why we call it a practice.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
I like that.
So practice, we can just notice what comes to mind as you think, okay, I'm going to practice now. And practice means that we allow ourselves to settle in a little bit, to turn our attention inward, to be curious about what's here now. And so, you know, I know that Caroline was speaking about you might be driving in your car. And so I just want to say, if you're driving in your car, you know, these instructions and invitations are going to be a little different.
Please keep your eyes open.
Right. Although in my classes, I do talk about mindful driving.
Ooh.
Right? About what it's like to realize what can happen to us when we get in these metal boxes. Right, and suddenly lose our capacity to be gentle, to be spacious.
Yeah.
Right, because so often we're hurrying.
Yes.
So.
Yeah, we have a gas pedal that is very easy to press down on.
Right, yeah. So let's settle in now. And the first thing that we can do is just notice our posture, to feel in the body where we're sitting. And so noticing feet, and if it's possible for you to plant your feet on the floor so that you feel that stability of feet resting on the floor. And then bringing attention up to notice sitting. So just aware of your weight resting in the seat of the chair or cushion or floor, wherever you find yourself. And then bringing attention to the spine, and without becoming rigid or stiff in any way, but just aware of how the spine is held, and see if it's possible to invite a posture that's dignified. And allowing the eyes to close, if that's comfortable for you. It's not necessary. But when we close our eyes, we're cutting off the visual stimulation that otherwise can capture our attention. So it just supports us in turning our attention inward. And then turning attention to the breath. And without trying to change it in any way, just inviting awareness of how the breath moves in the body. We often use the breath as a focus in meditation practice because it's in the present moment. It's always here and with us, available as a focus for what is here in our experience right now. So just allowing this awareness of the breath, this thing that is with us from our very first moments on this earth as independent beings, until our very last moment on earth as living beings. We don't have to pay attention to the breath, but we can. We can notice the in-breath and the out-breath. So as best you can, without trying too hard to make this any particular kind of experience, bringing attention to the movement of the breath. And perhaps you have already noticed that even when we have this clear intention to let our attention rest in the breath, that thinking arrives. These minds of ours seem to have a mind of their own. So many forms of thought that come and tempt us to get caught up planning, judging, remembering. So just noticing, this is how minds are. There's no judgment in this, right? Notice if you have some thinking that maybe is self-judgment, like, oh, I can't do this. My brain doesn't work like this. Right? We all have this experience of minds that like to be busy. So there's no judgment when thinking arrives. A recognition, oh, thinking is here. And then just very gently but firmly inviting attention back to begin again with this breath. We can notice how each breath is a little different, a little fuller, a little deeper. A little uneven. And then as your attention feels a little settled in this practice, we can allow this focus on the breath to move into the background and invite into the foreground of the mind now a larger focus. So expanding now to take in a sense of this body, aware perhaps even as we've been focusing on the breath, how body sensations have arisen. Some itch, some ache, some sense of pressure from clothing or the chair, some twitch. So just allowing attention now, just sort of scan and take in all of these little body sensations that arise that can sometimes be calling for our attention to react, to itch that scratch, to move and adjust. So as best you can in this practice, adopting a posture of stillness that is just noticing without reacting. Part of this body experience is hearing my voice. So allowing this focus on the body to soften, to move into the background as the focus, and turning now to take in more fully as the focus sound. So in addition to the sound of my voice, other sounds that are available to you, perhaps sounds from your body, from the room, from outside of the room. And we can notice again how the mind likes to get involved, likes to label and judge and categorize. But as best you can, staying really close to the direct experience, just taking in volume, patterns, proximity. And then allowing this focus on sound to soften, to move into the background, and inviting attention now to take in whatever is here. So in the body, sensations that are here, aware of the breath, aware of sound. As best you can, staying really close to what is happening right now. Not thinking about it, but just noticing. And then as we are about to end this practice, coming back again to the breath, just focusing on receiving. And just as a little imagery, you know, the breath is like our experience that we're learning about when we practice, about receiving what is here. Opening to take in what's here right now. So this breath, breathing in. And then as we exhale, a sense of letting go of what is not needed right now. So just for the next couple of breaths, and then as you're ready, opening eyes and inviting a little movement. And that's practice, a little taste of practice.
I like it a lot. I like that a lot. So if you're just tuning in, you just listened to a guided meditation with Dr. Ruth Folkman, and you're listening to Energy Matters. I'm Caroline Rutterman, and we're just relaxing and breathing and doing some mindfulness-based practices right now. And this is part of the practice, like you said. This is a skill that we can always come back to when we need to tap in and tune into more than just our thoughts, more than just where we have to go, where, you know, all that monkey chatter that we have always got going on. This is a really, really simple, easy way to, you know, just tune into that. And if you were as mesmerized by Ruth's voice as I was, you have a ton of guided meditations on your website as well. I did notice that they were connected on one of your pages, and there was at least like six or seven of them, right?
Oh no, there's more.
Okay.
Well, I have practices for the MBSR class, and then practices which are many of them are similar but slightly different for the MBCT class for depression and anxiety.
Gotcha.
And then I have some other shorter practices that I developed for other shorter classes that are like 10-minute practices.
Cool. Very cool. And then you record them so that your students can go back and listen whenever they want?
Well, I record them. You know, it's interesting. I put them on my website so they're available to the public because it just seemed like why not do that? So if people are in the class, I say, stay with the class.
Of course.
You know, and we'll do this sequentially and we'll build the capacity to move into these various practices over the 8 weeks.
Yeah.
But, you know, I just have them out there in the public for anybody to listen to if you're interested.
Well, thank you for putting them out there because I really liked them a lot. So tell me a little bit. So with the meditation that we just completed now, would that fit under more of the general mindfulness-based stress reduction? Or how would the focus on depression, mindfulness-based practices for depression, how would those practices differ?
Well, there's a little more emphasis in MBCT on using the breath, right? So there's so in those practices, we really guide participants in breathing in, and as you exhale, letting go of this focus and now turning to this other focus.
Gotcha.
Because the breath is so powerful.
And as a yogini,
you
know, absolutely, that's the foundation of that practice, of a lot of practices, you know?
Yeah. So MBCT, those practices emphasize that a little bit more than MBSR.
Okay. Just in case you're tuning in, MBCT stands for Mindfulness-Based Cognitive Therapy.
For depression and anxiety.
Exactly. And then Mindfulness-Based Stress Reduction is the
MBSR.
Yes. Sometimes like letters in my mind out loud, there's a little delay. I like to see these things written out. Right. So if you guys are kind of perusing the website, you know, drruthfolkman.com, make sure that you, I mean, that's, you know, the difference. It's all laid out very clearly online as well.
Mm-hmm. What's interesting about these two classes, because you asked about the difference between them.
Yeah.
And MBSR's long stand, it's about 40 years that program has been out there since Jon Kabat-Zinn developed it.
So they've been practicing it and exploring it and probably tweaking it.
Not so much, actually.
Really?
It's not very different.
Cool.
Which is very cool because the research on it can really develop and build on this base.
That's cool.
Of what's known, yeah. And then MBCT is more recent. That just started in the mid-90s.
Okay.
But that class really supports people in understanding the forms of thinking that really support and reinforce depression and anxiety. I've expanded that to include anxiety. Like the clinical trials and the program are really for depression.
Yeah.
And particularly people who've struggled with major depression.
Okay. Major depression, meaning like I literally can't get out of bed.
Yeah, clinical.
Okay.
Clinical diagnosis of major depressive disorder.
Yeah.
But then they've expanded that since then to apply it to a broader range of conditions. Mm-hmm. So I incorporate anxiety. So that program really helps people to develop their own awareness of, for me, this is what happens. This is what I say to myself.
Gotcha.
These are the situations for me that are triggering. Mm. So people in that program, even though, you know, everybody shares some relationship with depression or anxiety, what that actually means can be very unique.
Of course.
Right? What's triggering, what you say to yourself, and then what you do
Yeah.
In reaction to that.
And that's different for every single person.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah, very unique. And so the program really supports people in coming to know themselves in this way that's curious.
And can be a little scary.
Yeah. Well, people are pretty motivated. It can be hard, right? Because there's a lot of shame involved with struggling with depression and anxiety.
Absolutely.
And that's one of the reasons why I love teaching these classes, is that for both of them, it's so normalizing of experience, you know, to realize this is not your personal problem.
No.
Lots of people share your experience.
Absolutely.
Right? You don't have to be ashamed of it.
Yeah.
You don't have to feel alone in it.
Yeah.
Look at all of these people. So people learn from one another.
Yeah.
It's very powerful.
Yeah. That's cool. I like that. And welcome back. You are listening to Energy Matters at Valley Free Radio 103.3. And we are here with Dr. Ruth Volkman. And, you know, something that you brought up during the break is that, you know, science, you said that science is such a linchpin for why this is so popular, for why mindfulness, like mindfulness practices, are so popular right now. Do you want to talk about that a little bit more?
Because I really cannot not include something about the science that's the underpinnings of why there's so much interest in mindfulness and meditation in our culture and really around the world.
Yeah,
I mean, this is not just in the West. I mean, it's everywhere.
Yeah.
And so neuroscience that has looked at what happens in people's brains when they meditate, and looking at long-term meditators, but also novice meditators, and this discovery that the brain is really a learning machine.
We're machines. You heard it here first.
Well, in a way, because we can't just program in the way we want things to be, you know.
Yeah.
But whatever we practice becomes stronger.
Yeah.
Right?
Right.
And so that we're unintentionally practicing things all the time.
Absolutely.
Right.
Our belief systems, right? The thoughts that we think on repeat become our belief systems.
That's right. And our self-judgments.
Oh, yeah.
And our judgments about the world.
Absolutely.
And about the future. So I just want to put in a little plug to notice what you're practicing.
Yeah.
Because what we practice becomes stronger.
Yeah.
So, you know, if when you get angry, you blow up, you get better at blowing up every time you get angry.
Yeah. Hear that, people?
If you yell at your kids when they're misbehaving, you get better at yelling at your kids when they misbehave.
Yeah.
So this idea that what we practice and these little moments of practice really make a difference, and they add up.
Yeah.
So even after an 8-week program, they've identified these statistically significant changes in people's brains.
Oh, wow.
That are so encouraging after just 8 weeks.
That's not that much time.
Nope.
That's not that much time.
Yeah.
That's quick.
Yeah.
That's very quick. So I want to talk a little bit about awareness around money. And you had a really great, quote that was, all right, I'm just going to read this instead of trying to break it down. But essentially, you said awareness about money, how we think and feel about it, presents a very powerful opportunity to be and become conscious about our values and choices, and how money comes in and where it goes is an important but often overlooked practice in mindfulness. And in my notes, I wrote yes and like underlined it 3 times. So I'm just going to read that back one more time. So awareness about money, how we think and feel about it, presents a powerful opportunity to be and to become conscious about our values and choices. How money comes in and where it goes is an important but often overlooked practice on mindfulness. There's a lot in that paragraph. And I was really blown away, you know, by this idea of thinking about I mean, when I read that, I'm like, right, like money is energy. There's a flow to it. It flows in, how it comes into us and how it flows out from us. It's, you know, I mean, really, it's, you know, our thoughts are the same way, right? These thoughts that pop in and then kind of flow out of our mouths, right? So I guess, all right, I'm trying to sort of reorder my own thoughts a little bit about how this is, but you know, I remember many years ago, you know, this sort of idea of the repetitive belief systems that we were talking about a moment ago, you know, the things that we kind of unconsciously tell ourselves. I remember, you know, I was like, I think, I don't know how many times I said, like, I don't have any money, like, you know, being a 20 something living in New York City and just constantly broke. And until one time, one of my friends was like, you say that all the time. And I was just like, oh, do I? And it was for me a total mindfulness moment being like, oh, like, I don't have any money. And it's like, if I keep thinking that, I actually, that becomes what I believe. And that actually becomes what I keep seeing over and over. And that's sort of what I start bringing in. And, you know, I was really grateful for my friend. I mean, it took me a lot more years on top of that to actually start bringing in a lot more mindfulness. But what is one way that we can become aware of how we think and feel about money like that? You know, like I'm really lucky that I have very, very outspoken, loud kind of friends. But, you know, I love those types of people in my life because they do kind of hold that mirror up for me. What is one way that we can kind of bring some consciousness around how we think and feel about money? Like, how can we use that as a mindfulness moment?
Mm. Well, that's such an interesting question.
Thank you.
Yeah. You know, I mean, we're here basically talking about self-care.
Right.
Right. And the choices that we make in everyday life that ultimately weave the fabric of our lives. And so many of those choices are not conscious. They're not intentional. They're habits.
Right.
Habits of behavior.
Yeah.
And so money is one of those really interesting things, how we hold the idea of privilege and deprivation, right? The sense of, oh, I don't have enough.
Right.
Versus, well, you know, of course I'm going to go out and buy lunch every day. What else would I do? I don't have time to pack my lunch.
Sure.
Right? But these are things that add up.
Of course.
And so I think that just being aware of the places where you drop money without really recognizing, there's an opportunity cost to that.
Right. And this idea of letting how money flows out from us, how we're spending our money or how we're giving it away or where we're giving it away.
Yes.
Where we're placing that.
Yes. Yeah. So in my practice, I mean, I'm totally committed to community mental health and always thought that was going to be my life's work. And then it didn't work out that way.
Yeah.
And I'm in private practice. So what you read is part of a page that I have on my website about my philosophy of money.
Yeah. Yep.
Just as an invitation for people to think about the kinds of supports that can really help you to become as comfortable as you'd like to be in everyday life.
Yeah.
And this...
And kind and compassionate towards ourselves.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. Like, I want this, and this will help me be more comfortable in my life and feel more competent.
Yeah.
So that's how I operate my business. I have a big sliding scale for my individual work.
Yeah,
and for the classes, I really try to make it work for people who come from a range of backgrounds so that it's not, I'm not interested in working only with people that can just easily write out a check, you know?
Yeah. It's for everyone.
It's for everyone.
Yeah, it's community.
It's community.
Yeah, we're here for you guys.
Yeah.
Lovely. We are kind of coming towards the end of our show. So, you know, I would really go and encourage you to check out, you know, Ruth Volkman's website. It's drruthvolkman.com. And, you know, she's got some upcoming classes in September for the mindfulness-based stress reduction, as well as the mindfulness-based cognitive therapy for depression and anxiety. It sounds like you're doing really good work in Northampton. And I had a friend of a friend who took your class. He took a sabbatical last semester from teaching, and he spoke so highly of you and your class. And he was really, he said he was so, you know, felt so blessed and lucky. So so you come highly recommended.
Yeah. Well, thank you.
Yeah.
I feel very blessed and lucky to be able to offer this work to people because, you know, I get to practice along with them, you know, and you've all heard that saying, we teach what we want to know.
Yes.
So it's all about practice and what can we do to keep feeding it and nurturing it.
Very cool. Very cool. I hope that everyone has a fabulous rest of your late afternoon and evening, and be well.